Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The new year is just getting going. We've had our first batch of new releases this week, one of which is really unusual, as you'll hear later. And we've already learned that 2014 will be the year of the home digital music organizer thing. At least that's what tech guru Elliot Van Buskirk will tell us. We also have our first Brooklyn band of the year joining us in the studio. Mutual Benefit will play some of their lovely chamber pop for us. And we've already had our first major loss in the music world. Phil Everly of the Everly Brothers died this past weekend at age 74.
Bye-bye, love. Bye-bye, happiness. Hello, loneliness. I think I'm gonna cry.
Phil Everly and his brother Don rode the top of the charts for much of the late 50s and early 60s, and with Phil's passing, the music world paused to reflect on the Everly brothers, their look, their notorious breakup, their later reunion, and of course, their sound. The Everly Brothers' songs could be moving, eerie, often subtle, so subtle, in fact, that it was easy to underestimate the impact that the Everly Brothers had on the rock, folk, and pop music that would follow them. Here to trace the duo's impact for us is Craig Havighurst, the Nashville-based journalist who's also the co-host and blogger for the syndicated Americana radio show, Music City Roots. Hey, Craig.
Hi, John. Nice to be here.
So, do you agree with the idea that we somehow take the Everly Brothers for granted?
Their influence sort of does. It snakes through music. Obviously, the idea of two voices joined together, the Everly Brothers didn't invent that.
Right.
But when you have the Beatles in their pre-Beatles days calling themselves the new Everly Brothers as they go to audition in Britain, and then the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson just falling all over himself through his career about the Everlys, and Simon and Garfunkel bringing them out of retirement in the 80s and featuring them so prominently and saying we wouldn't be here but for, you realize, when you begin to listen for that sort of, those intervals, those tones, and the way the phrasing goes, you think, wow, they sort of codified a kind of singing that would stand for intimacy and be very just really reach people in its purity and its phrasing.
I have to say, Craig, I have been thinking about the Everly Brothers a lot in the last couple of weeks, even before Phil Everly died, because Showtime has been airing this movie called Another Day, Another Time Inside Llewyn Davis, the concert they did at New York's Town Hall, featuring a lot of folk music, some of it from the Coen Brothers movie and some of it not. And every time I see the milk carton kids on that stage singing, I think, oh, my God, Everly Brothers.
Yeah, they were one of the first, they're probably the first contemporary band that I thought of that embodies and embraces the sound without imitating. They are just an incredibly fresh duo. Their big names are Kenneth Pattingale and Joey Ryan. And in just 2 years, this band was formed in 2011. They were solo artists who weren't getting much going. And then all of a sudden, once they joined forces and voices, they have really blown up and gotten T-Bone Burnett's attention, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we have a song from the new Ash and Clay album.
Yeah, the song is called Snake Eyes from this L.A.-based folk duo called the Milk Carton Kids.
Swing low, swing low, for to carry me home in fire, the skies of red. My breath's gone cold, a kiss from the cold, a blanket.
blanket of snow overhead. So
did I mention, Craig, that every time I hear the Milk Carton Kids, I think, oh, my God, the Everly Brothers.
For a while, I thought of Simon and Garfunkel as a first reaction, but we have to put that aside and then listen to them on their own terms, don't we? But they really are marvelous.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It's also struck me as I was thinking about them and that track and how new that is, that the duo, the vocal duo, the close harmony, is also a big feature of the music on the show Nashville on ABC.
Uh-huh.
Some of the best work on that show has been the Scarlett Gunner duets early on, and they really kind of make a big deal about the vocal duo, which is not big at country radio at all. It hasn't been for years, but in that alternative universe, it's also kind of a return to the purity of those two voices together, just like we heard with the Milk Carton Kids.
The Milk Carton Kids, go to soundcheck.org and search for Milk Carton Kids. You'll find their in-studio session. They are past guests on Soundcheck. We heard the song Snake Eyes from them. Craig Havockhurst is with us on the line, the Nashville-based journalist and co-host of the syndicated Americana show Music City Roots, and talking about the long tail, the impact of the Everly Brothers. Phil Everly died last week, just before his 75th birthday. Now, you're talking about that combination of two voices, the kind of, you know, diatonic, triadic harmony that was sort of key to the Everly Brothers' sound. Where else do we find that, and do we have to have both voices be male?
Well, no. One of the songs that I thought of immediately as well was the was Love Hurts, as covered by Emmylou Harris and Graham Parsons, which came out more than a decade after the initial 1960 hit by the Everly Brothers. And for Emmylou Harris, meeting Graham Parsons was the key to unlocking the world of country music and American folk music and what we now sort of call Americana. And he kind of tutored her in some ways about some of his favorite artists, George Jones and the Louvin Brothers and the Everly Brothers. And at the time, for young, hip, folk singing, cool kids like Emmylou Harris in Washington, D.C., this was music. Country music was not something that she would have, her peers would naturally have thought was cool and interesting. And it took Graham Parsons cajoling to get her to listen carefully. And then when they joined voices on Love Hurts, which was actually released after Graham's death and has a lot of overtones about their relationship,
mm-hmm.
You hear just such a magnificent counterpoint in the vocals. I think that the bridge of the song is the real heart of it. It's always been my favorite Everly Brothers song, and she has continued to do this with various partners through the years. She's recorded it multiple times and sung it with Buddy Miller and a bunch of different people. But clearly this was one of her iconic records with Graham Parsons.
And, of course, the song Love Hurts, we think of this, the version by Nazareth in 1975 that spawned the power ballad. But that was, you know, the umpteenth version already of the song. Here's the Graham Parsons, Emmylou Harris version that that Craig's been talking about.
I'm young, I know, but even so,
yeah.
the international number one version of Love Hurts by Nazareth, there was this version of Love Hurts by Gram Parsons and Emmylou Harris from their album Grievous Angel. And 14 years before that was the original recording by the Everly Brothers. Craig, we should probably at this point mention Felice and Boudelot Bryant, the husband and wife songwriting team, who wrote Love Hurts and wrote, didn't they write all of the early Everly Brothers hits?
Enough to say all and be basically accurate. Bye Bye Love, their breakout song especially.
Mm-hmm. And Wake Up Little Susie and All I Have to Do Is Dream. Yeah. Now, it's probably also worth noting that they were in the first class of inductees into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but they are also in the Country Music Hall of Fame. So does that kind of show the range of their influence, or is that a reflection of their own personal roots?
Absolutely, their roots. They're from Muhlenberg, Kentucky. Their dad, Ike, was a country guitar player who influenced Merle Travis, was a contemporary and friend of Merle Travis. And they did this record in 1962, I think. No, excuse me, 1958, called Songs Our Daddy Taught Us, the Everly Brothers' second album after becoming stars of rock and roll with songs like Wake Up Little Susie. Made a pure country roots record of throwback tunes, which was a really radical idea, and I'm sure that some people around them thought they were crazy for going backwards instead of forwards at the time. But it produced an extraordinary album that gave us sort of put some of those songs on the map, and that would later show up as kind of important catalog and canonical songs in the Americana catalog.
Kentucky. You are the dearest land outside of heaven to me. Kentucky, I miss your laurel and your redwood tree.
It seems like everybody was thinking about the Everly Brothers this past year. There were three, at least, tribute albums, and maybe the best known was called Foreverly with Nora Jones and Billy Joe Armstrong of Green Day. A very unlikely pair, but hey, it was a really brilliant record. And this is very meta. This is Billy Joe and Nora covering the Everlys, covering the Louvin Brothers, whose song Kentucky would have been big when the Everly Brothers, rather, were very young guys. And it was on that list of songs that Ike Everly, their dad, said, you know, pay attention to this. And it was really cool to have Billy Joe and Nora revive that song in 2013.
From their album Foreverly, here's Green Day's Billy Joe Armstrong and Nora Jones.
Kentucky, you are the dearest land outside of heaven to me. Kentucky, I miss your laurel and your redwood trees. When I so high, for that is where God will look for me.
That's a pretty great arrangement. Billy Joe Armstrong and Nora Jones with Kentucky from their album called Foreverly, last year's tribute album to the Everly Brothers, and as Craig Havighurst was telling us, one of no less than three Everly Brothers tribute albums that all magically appeared in the same year, in 2013. We're talking about the lingering influence of the Everly Brothers. Phil Everly died last week. He was 74. And Craig Havighurst, the Nashville-based journalist and broadcaster, is with me on Soundcheck. So what else should we listen to? You want to do another male-female vocal thing?
Sure, yeah. I thought about Gillian Welch, who emerged in the mid-90s, about the time that a lot of us were kind of really tuning into this new kind of Americana feel and the revival that, you know, began to really climax with the O Brothers soundtrack that she was involved in. But mm-hmm. she did a record with her partner, David Rawlings, in 2001 at RCA Studio Beat, which is where Don and Phil Everly cut their early hits, a lot of their music, in Nashville. So they had some of the same ambience in the studio, the same microphones, I expect. So this song is called I Want to Sing That Rock and Roll. It's an original Gillian Welch, David Rawlings song, but Gillian and David, they don't always sing together as a pair the way the Everly Brothers nearly always did, but when they do match up, you can tell they are feeling that brother duet tradition from the Everlys back to the Louvins, the Delmores, and the that vibe of where those two voices kind of become one, and where those intervals just so gently kind of lull you into a kind of a state.
I want to sing that rock and roll. I want to electrify my soul. 'Cause everybody been making a shout so big and loud, been drowning me out. I want to sing that rock and roll. I want to reach that glory land. I want to shake my Savior's hand. And I want to sing that rock and roll. I want to electrify my soul. 'Cause everybody been making a shout so big and loud, been drowning me out. I want to sing that rock and roll. I've been a traveling near and far, but I won't lay down my old guitar, and I want to sing.
That is Gillian Welch and David Rawlings singing Gillian's song, I Want to Sing That Rock and Roll, from her album Time the Revelator. And once again, hearing the influence, the echoes of the sound of the Everly Brothers in that music. And it really is, Craig, it is the harmonies, right? There's something... Well, you use the word intimate. There really is something that kind of pulls you in to hear those two voices in that kind of very particular close harmony.
Yeah, and the fact that they're balanced, there's not a specific lead vocal with support. Each line could stand alone as a strong melody, and the two voices are mixed up exactly the same, whereas so much pop music is a lead singer with background vocalists.
Right.
There was no background vocalist in the Everly Brothers.
So in other words, if Phil dropped out, Don's melody could still, you know, would still be a nice lead melody, and vice versa also the case.
That's right. Apparently, Don was, when you hear one voice, most of the time it's Don's. But Phil, the two sing, I mean, it must be 85 to 90% of the time that the two, when they're on record, are joining voices together.
All right. We've been speaking with Craig Havockhurst, the Nashville-based journalist, co-host and blogger of the nationally syndicated Americana radio show Music City Roots, talking to us about some of the artists who have followed in the footsteps of the Everly Brothers, beginning with the Beatles and the Beach Boys and Simon and Garfunkel, but we're hearing some of the others. You're going to bring us back to our own state, New York, to wrap things up, right, Craig?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that the bluegrass tradition was represented here, because the vocal duo, the brother duet, has had a long history through bluegrass music, and the Osborne Brothers in the 50s and 60s would have been quick to cite the Everly Brothers as influences from outside their genre, but bringing it in.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a band that from upstate New York, rural New York, called the Gibson Brothers, who just toiled away and did great work for 20 years and finally are really receiving their due. They are the two-time reigning IBMA Entertainers of the Year. So they're basically, according to the business professionals in bluegrass, members of the IBMA, the top act out there right now. And they had the song I thought of was something from their 2013 album. They call it Music, and the track is called I'm Dying for Someone to Live For. Not everything the Gibson Brothers sings together sounds Everly-esque, but I thought this one particularly did.
All right, this is Eric and Lee Gibson, so they are brothers in the Everly Brothers tradition. Dying for Someone to Live For is the name of the song. Craig, thanks very much for sharing this music with us today.
Thanks a lot, John.
Loneliness falls all around, and it's almost got me down. Well, I guess when it rains, it pours. I'm dying for someone to live for. There's a whippoorwill out on a limb, but I know I'm more lonesome than him. Now I don't know who he's crying for. I'm dying for someone to live for, and the weeping willow cries every time a good love says goodbye. I hear the tide coming in on the shore. I'm dying for someone to live for.
That's the bluegrass group the Gibson Brothers and the song Dying for Someone to Live For from their album They Call It Music. So, how did you react to the recent death of Phil Everly? Did it make you think about the music of the Everly Brothers, perhaps in a different light? Post your comment on soundcheck.org or leave us a voicemail at 866-939-1612. Coming up, it's not a duo of brothers, but the Brooklyn-based project Mutual Benefit has embraced some of the gentle sounds that made the Everlys so great. Led by songwriter Jordan Lee, Mutual Benefit will join us next to play songs from a great album that they released this past fall. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Don't know if you've noticed, but the music press has a habit of making a big deal when they discover a new artist when, in fact, that artist has actually been around for a while. If you're a fan of Jordan Lee, you might know that he's had at least four releases issued as cassettes prior to the new full-length record with his band Mutual Benefit. Their airy chamber pop is now drawing high praise from tastemakers like Pitchfork and Rolling Stone. Mutual Benefit's here in the studio to play for us some songs from their recent release called Love's Crushing Diamond. Here's Mutual Benefit live on Soundcheck with Advanced Falconry.
But I won't forget. friendly face and find meaning and she talks softly, sees through me, says something I can't hear, but I won't forget the way she
is Mutual Benefit, playing live here in the Soundcheck studio. The song is called Advanced Falconry. Jordan Lee singing and playing the electric guitar. Corey Siegler also singing. The strings played by Jake Falby and Molly Fletcher. Mike Clifford on electric guitar. Mark Mirza playing the electric bass. And songwriter Jordan Lee making his way to the mic here in the Soundcheck studio. Nice to have you here.
Thanks very much.
So is Mutual Benefit a kind of a variable ensemble? Is it becoming more settled these days?
It's definitely becoming more settled. It's a little bit easier to convince people to play with me than before.
Well, for one thing, you're in one place for a longer period of time. It seems like you've been sort of stricken with wanderlust for these last number of years.
Yeah, wanderlust or self-sabotage or whatever you want to call it.
So St. Louis, Boston, Austin, Texas, Ohio, and now Brooklyn. Does the album reflect those journeys, those wanderings through the states?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a lot easier to be inspired when you're in a new situation or a new town. And so a lot of the songs are based off of that feeling of wonder. I was really enjoying taking the train for a while, and it's these really slow journeys, these like 20 or 30 hour journeys through parts of the country that have very little going on the outside, at least.
Right.
And so I try to reflect a lot of those feelings on the record.
Mm-hmm. So I think I probably wasn't the only New Yorker listening when you said I was enjoying taking the train and thinking, he's enjoying the D train? What is that? What kind of guy is this? But you mean like a real train.
Oh,
like,
yeah. More like the Amtrak. I'm not super excited to be on the G sometimes.
Now, during the course of these peregrinations throughout the states, you're also kind of dropping these cassettes behind you, like musical breadcrumbs. why that format? Why cassettes?
Well, at first it was just the cheapest way to make a thing that people might actually want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're at the point now that CDRs almost feel disposable. There's not a lot of thought put behind it. And so when we're going on tour, you know, you can just dub cassettes yourself and you can collage your own art, and all of a sudden it's a desirable object, and you can also like pay, you know, use it to pay for your food and gas and stuff.
And it's almost business card size, and really that's what it is, right? It's a business card you hand to a club owner or whatever. Well, now, you know, the vinyl thing we've talked about on the show a number of times, and you know, vinyl sales continue to rise, and mm-hmm. there is a whole kind of vinyl culture. Is there a cassette culture?
Yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of interesting essays about it on the web, but for a while, cassettes never went away for like more experimental or noise music, and I feel like the thing that's new is that a lot of people are putting pop music and other things on there, and so at least among my group of friends, it's kind of like an aesthetic thing where it's like I put my record on a cassette, and that means it's probably going to sound a little like off kilter, like this is the demographic of people that are probably going to enjoy it.
But now, Love's Crushing Diamond, your first full length, mm-hmm. is actually available, you know, digitally, and you know, so what happened there?
Well, I guess I sold out. No, it's
you got your head out of the 1980s, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I felt really proud of this record, and I was okay with working with a label who was, you know, wanted to do it more conventionally. Mm-hmm. And if anything, you know, I can go back and make 100 run cassettes of my next record. But I guess I was pretty curious and also pretty broke about, you know, so it's been a really interesting journey.
We're speaking with Jordan Lee. He leads the band Mutual Benefit. Their album Love's Crushing Diamond was released back in October. They're playing some of it for us here in the Soundcheck studio. Once again, the album is called Love's Crushing Diamond, and this is Auburn Epitaphs, with Jordan Lee and Mike Clifford playing the guitars, and Mark Mirza on bass, Jake Falby, who does the string arrangements, playing the violin, along with Molly Fletcher, and both Jordan and Corey Siegler doing the vocals.
The cold wind starts to change the leaves, and I can see you in my dreams. You carve some words into a stone after you left for the great unknown. You really hoped that it means something. They permeate a part of me. I pause to feel the gravity, and you carve some words into a stone after you left for the great unknown. You really hoped that it means something. That it means something.
That's called Auburn Epitaphs, another live performance on Soundcheck from the band Mutual Benefit, performing here in our Manhattan studio, and playing for us some songs from their last album called Love's Crushing Diamond. This song, called Strong Swimmer, is the final one on the record. Let's hear another live performance from Mutual Benefit on Soundcheck. Thank you.
and you taught me how. Never fear those tall waves, and you stay. Bed on the bottom, and that current took you away, and it made you pay and pay. When I saw you, I didn't.
That is Mutual Benefit, live on Soundcheck, with a song called Strong Swimmer, which is actually the final song on the group's October 2013 release called Love's Crushing Diamond. After all the wanderings, recording in St. Louis and Boston and living in Ohio and Texas and now in Brooklyn, does Brooklyn feel like home, at least for the moment?
Yeah, absolutely. I have family in Texas and Ohio, and I spent the last couple of weeks visiting them. And it was the first time that I've been on the road and really didn't want to be. I felt like, oh, I want to go back to my house and see my friends. So I don't know. I think my next album's going to be really boring.
In the meantime, there are some gigs which you do not have to travel very far for. February 7th here in New York at the Mercury Lounge, and then February 8th here in New York at the still new Rough Trade record store. So look for Jordan and the rest of the band. Mutual benefit. The album's called Love's Crushing Diamond, and Jordan, it's been a pleasure having you guys here.
Oh, thanks a lot.
Remember when buying a home stereo system was easy? You know, you just bought a $2,000 receiver and some huge speakers that were the size of easy chairs. Well, these days, the wires are gone, but the challenges remain. We'll talk with Elliot Van Buskirk of Evolver.fm about the future of home audio, next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Let me take you on a tour of the Schaefer Homestead, an audio tour of our audio devices. Let's head first into the kitchen, where we have this little old Bose radio with a wire hanging off it so I can attach my iPod. Proceed upstairs, and we've got an old compact stereo system that we hardly ever use anymore. The kids' rooms each have a portable iPod dock. And in our room, we've got a wired iPod dock. And then back downstairs to the living room. Here, we have a new Blu-ray player that we got for Christmas, which I'm told somehow plays music, although I have no idea how. Now, maybe your home is also full of audio devices that don't talk to each other. Well, Elliot Van Buskirk, editor of Evolver.fm, is joining us now on Soundcheck to tell us why he believes that now is the time for a home audio revolution. Hey, Elliot.
Hey, John. How's it going?
Is there something out there for me so that I don't have all these different things cluttering up my home?
Well, the problem that you're facing is one that many of us do, and, you know, you're the host of a very popular music program, and so I assume music's important to you, and that just...
I can't stand the stuff.
Judging from the setup of your house, it's very fragmented, and this is how, you know, this is how it is for many of us. And the comparison I've been using is, like, you know, would the CD have taken off if you needed to buy a Sony CD player to play something from Sony Music's record label? Or, you know, we assume that you can take a CD and drop it into any CD player, and that's just not the case for these so-called more evolved solutions. But I'm thinking this is going to change this year. We're going to really see this start heating up.
Why hasn't it happened yet? I mean, we've been digital for over a decade now.
Yeah, I think for a while everything was moving towards portables and headphones, and I think we've all pretty much got a handle on that.
Right.
And excitingly, a lot of us are using smartphones for that, which are connected. Now that we're getting used to all those services, you know, whatever your favorite apps and internet radio stations, and you know, whether you listen to RDO or Spotify or one of those music subscriptions, all that stuff is now coming into the home.
So is that the golden goal here, to get digital music to play throughout your devices, throughout your home, without a lot of wires?
Without a lot of wires, and without a lot of work, and without a lot of headaches. Apple is one early mover on this. If you use iTunes or an iPhone or even Android, I've found apps that will work from Android to Apple AirPlay, which is a little weird. But you can pretty simply and inexpensively beam music to multiple speakers throughout your home, whether they're actual AirPlay speakers, which you can buy, or you get an Airport Express, connect that to some, to any speakers, you know, the ones that you have in the attic even, can be brought into this modern era. So I like that solution. If you want to take things a little more seriously, Sonos has been doing this forever. I think it must have been 10 years ago I was calling Sonos the iPod of the home. And they're still sort of the leader for, if you want to take things a step up from, you know, this fragmented world that you're dealing with all these docks and cables and wires. If you want to sort of skip AirPlay and skip all that and just upgrade your whole setup, including with speakers and setting up a whole secondary wireless network in your home that you don't really have to worry about, Sonos brings the music in over your normal internet connection, but then it has its own network, so you're not on your own Wi-Fi thing. You have your own, like, music wireless network that doesn't interfere.
That sounds, Elliot, super convenient and possibly super expensive.
It's definitely more expensive than a lot of people expect, in part because you have to buy a Zone Bridge, which doesn't even play music. So that's the thing that, you know, that helps drive up the cost a little bit. But you know, if you ask anybody who uses it, people are generally pretty happy with it once they, you know, if they do decide to spend that extra money. And it lets you control your music from your computer, any phone, and it works great. You can start playing it with your phone and leave the house, and the music keeps going.
So now both Sonos and AirPlay are already out there, have been out there for a while. Why do you think this is the year of the home audio revolution? Is there something new coming down the pike?
Yeah, it seems like all the other big players are waking up to this, finally. I mean, I kind of can't believe it's taken this long. But Google is selling a $35 Chromecast device that can play music through your television. I bet they're going to do a more robust music thing to compete with Apple AirPlay. Spotify, many people's favorite service, they recently announced that they are going to have their own wireless protocol, so there will be Spotify speakers. And that will just play Spotify, and you can control that with your phone or your computer or your tablet. And then my sort of dark horse favorite is this thing called Qualcomm AirPlay. Qualcomm's been trying to figure out how to do this for a while. What I like about AllPlay is, and I hope I'm not getting too technical, it's based on an open source thing called AllJoin.
I'm gonna have to say, yes, you are getting too technical. My eyes have already glazed over.
I'm so sorry, but let me just say that this would be like a way for all this stuff to talk to each other if everybody decided to get on board with it.
Right. It strikes me that with the Spotify thing, that's only going to work for Spotify. It's not going to be, you know, useful for all the other devices that are not Spotify-enabled in my home. Will this Qualcomm thing, it would require Spotify and Google and all the other players to buy into their idea, right?
Yeah, and so far they've got Panasonic, which isn't exactly a lightweight, Altec Lansing, which makes probably some of the iPod docks in your kids' rooms. They're on board with this, and Panasonic seems really excited. They said that, you know, they're saying at CES that they're going to release even more of these than the ones they're showing right now.
All right, now I'm glad you mentioned CES. That's the International Consumer Electronics Show, which takes place every year in Las Vegas and is happening this week as we speak. So have you heard any rumblings coming from there?
It seems like one of the big trends. You know, every year we technology journalist types, that's the big game, is to figure out, like, what is CES about this year? And definitely this music in the home, digital music in the home is a big part of it.
So faced with this thicket of choices and competing choices that at this point don't play nicely with each other, what is a young person to do, someone of the generation who has grown up without wires and speakers and stereos, but instead has grown up on increasingly smaller, more portable devices, headphones that have in recent years become like big business and have great sound? How do we get that generation to buy into this idea?
Well, I think it's just something that will happen. I refuse to believe that in the future we're all going to sit around in our homes either watching a television or listening to music on our headphones. I think it's just, there's no way that music fans are just going to stop listening to music in the home.
And for the generation that did grow up with huge stereo systems and big honking speakers, how do we get them to buy into the idea that a little device next to your TV might be all that you need?
Well, to them, I say, welcome to digital music, because if you're the type of person who does like to have a nice set of speakers and cue something up with a remote and sit in a nice couch and really pay attention to what you're listening to, this is something that's now possible with digital music and not just with, you know, records and CDs. I would caution these people, or I would uncaution them, should I say. Don't be afraid. The people who sell these wireless music systems for the home are very aware that you have never used one before, and they make it as easy as possible to get everything set up. It's really something that people can do.
All right, so maybe at this time next year I will have a home free of wires, but I doubt it. Elliot Van Buskirk is the editor of Evolver.fm, joins us on Soundcheck pretty regularly to talk tech with us. And Elliot, Happy New Year. Thanks for being with us.
Great to talk to you, John.
Climbing up on Salisbury Hill, I could see the city light.
Tuesday is album release day in the United States, which means this past Tuesday brought us the first official batch of new albums for 2014. One of them, you remember that old Sesame Street song, "One of These Things Is Not Like the Others"? Well, one of these new releases is really different. It's from Peter Gabriel. In 2010, the English art rocker put out an album of covers called Scratch My Back. Now he's released And I'll Scratch Yours, a companion record of Peter Gabriel songs played by the artists that he covered on that first record. So he played songs by Arcade Fire and Paul Simon and Lou Reed, and they all returned the favor on this new record. In fact, the Lou Reed contribution, a dark and glowering version of Salisbury Hill, is one of the last things he recorded before he died.
Climbing up on Salisbury Hill, I could see the city light. Wind was blowing, time stood still. Eagle flew out of the night. Knew something to observe. Came in close, I heard a voice. Standing, stretching every nerve. I had to listen, had no choice. I did not believe the information. Just had to trust my imagination. My heart was going boom, boom, boom. Sonny said, grab your things, I've come to take you home. My friends would think I was a slut, turning water into wine. Open doors would soon be shut. So I went from day to day, though my life was in a rut, till I thought of what I'd say. Which connection I should cut. I was feeling part of the scenery. I walked right out of the machinery. My heart was going boom, boom, boom. Hey, he said, grab your things, I've come to take you home.
the late Lou Reed in one of his final recordings doing a version of Peter Gabriel's song Salisbury Hill. Recognizably the same song, but a very different mood in this Lou Reed version. It's from the brand new album, And I'll Scratch Yours, released on Tuesday and featuring various artists covering Peter Gabriel's songs. That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow on the show, Duke Ellington was a towering figure in American music, but even those closest to him said he was a hard man to know. Author Terry Teachout joins us to talk about his recent biography called Duke, A Life of Ellington. Plus, a more contemporary take on jazz. We'll hear an in-studio performance from sax player and bandleader Matana Roberts. She'll also share her Coin Coin project, inspired by her own long family history. That does it for today's show. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.